and welcome to SCL, the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. This is episode 239 for the 17th of August 2014. My name's Rob from robinonphoto.com, and this is my little journey through the wonderful, wonderful world of photography. Well, I hope everybody's had a fantastic couple of weeks since the last podcast. Been out taking lots of photos or reading lots of photo magazines and photo books, and enjoying this wonderful art that we call image making. So, what's been going on in the robinonphoto.com world? Well, I've been doing a few videos over on YouTube, so if you haven't checked it out already, head on over to robinonphoto.com, go over onto the right-hand side of the website, go scroll down a bit, and it says, my videos on YouTube. And I think I've done some more beginner's guides. So there's a beginner's guide to metering, different metering modes. But you've got to forgive me, because in the video, instead of saying metering mode, I say exposure modes. So I was going to redo the video, I thought I'll sod it, so I've left it as it is. I think there's a beginner's guide to metering mode, AF mode. I think that's been up there for a while. And I've just done a beginner's guide to exposure compensation as well. So if those phrases mean something, you think, oh, I'd like to know a little bit more about controlling the exposure on my photographs, then check those videos out. SCL, the Photography Podcast, is actually available on Stitcher again. For some reason, it wasn't available for a long, long time. I think perhaps because my RSS feed wasn't validating properly. And if you don't know about Stitcher, it's quite a good mobile app on Android. You can probably get it for iOS as well. I think you can play stuff on your desktop with it as well. And it kind of aggregates lots of different podcasts and music. It's a bit like iTunes for Android. Obviously, if you've got an iPhone or an iPod, iTunes is probably the best way to download and listen to SCL. But if you're on Android and maybe you're manually downloading the podcasts or listening to them from the website, Stitcher's not too bad, but we're actually back on Stitcher. There might be quite a few episodes that are missing, but I'm pretty sure the latest ones since last episode, SCL 237, I know, we remember, 238 came before 237. It's all complicated. But it's on Stitcher, and it's an okay app. It's not brilliant, but it's what I use on my Android phone. There's some things that are missing from it, some popular podcasts that I listen to, but most of them are on there. So just go to download the app, search for SCL, and it should come up, and you should be able to subscribe. Now, really exciting news. I've actually got a new lens. This is the first lens I got since the 40mm f2.8 that I got, pancake lens I got with my 600D at Christmas. And this one popped up on Gumtree, I think it was 2 weeks ago. And, I mean, you know, we don't have much money. I don't have any money to spend on lenses and things. But this one was such a bargain, I sort of dipped into the savings. And what it was, Gumtree is a bit like Craigslist in the UK, and I have the app on my phone, and I look at it every day just to see if there's any things come off. I've bought a couple of things off in the past, and a lens came up, and I thought, this is too good to be true. It's too cheap to be true. And what it is, or was, it's the Canon EF, so full frame lens, a 70-300 f4-5.6 image stabilized lens. And it was advertised for £130, which is incredibly cheap. I mean, really, really cheap. So I started doing a little bit of research about it, because there's been a couple of versions of the that sort of focal length lens. There's been a 75-300 IS, and obviously there's the 100-300 push-pull lens, which I've got. And there's a, I think there's a 70-300 non-IS version. Well, there definitely is. And it's kind of, you know, they're not cheap lenses, the latest versions. I mean, I'm just looking now at the lens that I've got new on eBay. Sorry, on Amazon.co.uk goes for £369. Okay, and this lens was advertised for £130. I thought, there's got to be something wrong with it. No, it can't be true. Can't be true. So then I went on Amazon as well. Sorry, I'm getting, keep going. Then I went on eBay. Let's search for Canon, 70-300 IS. Let's have a quick look. So no, I don't want the L version. Let's have a look, see what comes up. I mean, new ones are listed at 385. I mean, the non-IS versions, people list it for £110. There's, you know, whichever way you look at, £130 for that lens is incredibly cheap. So I left it for a few days, and I thought, no, it's too good to be true. It must be something wrong with it, doesn't work, or it's not what it appears. But it was still there a few days later, and I thought, oh, sod it, I'm going to send them a few messages. So I sent them a couple of messages saying that, sorry to bother you, have you still got the lens, and is it in okay condition, does it all work? And they came back, and I got an email back a few hours later saying, yes, it's perfect condition, it all works. So I emailed back, so I'll tell you what, I'll if you've still got it, I'll come and get it off you and give you the cash tonight. And they said, yes. So I had to email them back, said, well, what's your address then? And luckily it was just down the motorway in Eastleigh, so I took some money out of the account and nipped down to Eastleigh. Found the address. I took my 600D with me, so I had a camera to test it on. They went inside. The chap got the lens out. It's still in the box. Still got the UV. It's got a UV filter on. Still got the box for the UV filter. The brand lens looks brand new. You know, and I checked it. Yes, it is the latest version. It's got the zoom lock. It's the 70-300. It's got the two different types of image stabilization. One for general hand holding and one for when you're panning. I put it on my 600D. It focused fine. I could hear the image stabilization cut in. I could see the image getting stiller, and everything seemed perfect. So I kind of tried to start up a chat with the guy, and said, "Oh, all right, yeah, you into photography?" And he said, "No." Basically, all he said was, "Yeah, a little bit, but I don't get to use this lens very often." So then I thought, well, maybe they've made a mistake with the listing. Maybe it's not £130 they want for it. Maybe it's £230. So then I said, well, it was £130, yeah. And the bloke says, yeah. So I got the money out, gave it to him, and he gave it to me. I mean, this thing's in a box, but I mean, it looks brand new. They've even got as I said, the box for the UV filter that's on the end of it. So I took it back to the cold, dead excited, got it home, tested it, everything seems fine. There is a sticker from the London Camera Exchange on it, which is a camera shop chain here in the UK. So maybe they bought it second hand a while ago, but they could have bought it new. But honestly, this lens is in mint condition. So now I've kind of, you know, I've got this conundrum, if you like. I've got this great 70-300 f/4-5.6 IS lens, and I've got my 55-250 IS lens, you know, the telephoto that I've had a lot. Had for quite a while, and I really like the 55-250. I think it's an incredibly sharp lens. It's very, very light as well. And the question is the 70-300 IS a better lens? Because the reason why it's kind of I'm thinking about it is because I got it for such a bargain. If I were to sell that lens, you know, second hand, I could probably get well over £200 for it. So that would then mean I could then get something different, like a Canon do a new, and I'm probably going to get the focal length wrong here, but they do a new ultra wide angle lens for about £300, which is it something like a 10-20 IS they do, which would be very exciting because that's a part of the focal length that I just haven't got in my arsenal, apart from I have this, like probably lots of you guys have, I have this wide angle adapter that you can screw on the front of your kit lens, but it's not quite the same, it's very soft. Or, you know, do I spend a little bit, save up a bit more, or maybe sell something like the 40mm 2.8 and the 51.8 that Mark 1 I've got, and the 70-300, and get something like the F4, the 70, what do they do? They do the 70-200 F4L lens, don't they? You know, and I could actually get some L glass. So this is the conundrum I've got. You know, do I keep the 70-300 IS, or do I and sell the 55-250, or you know, do I keep the 55-250 and sell the 70-300 and be able to make a considerable profit on it to spend on something else that doesn't cover my focal length? Obviously, the beauty with the EF 70-300 is that it would work on a full frame camera as well. Not that I've got one. But it'll work on a film camera, which I have got some Canon film cameras. But also it does work with my Jessop's 2x extender. So what this all really means is I've got to spend some time really testing this lens comparatively between the 55-250 and the 70-300, just to see whether it's worth keeping or not. So what I'm going to be doing over the next week or so is I'm going to come up with lots of different ways of comparing them. I mean, what I'm really interested in is sharpness, especially at the long end, because you buy a long zoom, you know, for that long zoom, don't you? Is the 300 considerably better than the 250 at 300 millimeters or at 250 millimeters in terms of sharpness, clarity, color? Is the image stabilization much better? You know, so when I'm at 300 millimeters, can I shoot at a lower shutter speed than I can with the 55-250 at a lower shutter speed? That sort of stuff. And I'll obviously do my full YouTube review and a post on robinonphoto.com as well. So if anybody's been through this process already about maybe upgrading from the 55-250 to the 70-300 IS, or have gone straight in with the 70-300, please email me, scalespeed@gmail.com, or put comments in the comment section on robinonphoto.com, because I definitely would like some advice on that. So anyway, I think it was a couple of days later, I'd finished work, I'm sure it was a Sunday night actually, we finish at 4 o'clock on a Sunday, so even after tea, in the summer it's still pretty light, at sort of 5:30, we've still got light till 8:30, 9 o'clock, and I thought, sod it, I'm going to go out. So I kind of pulled myself together, got my camera kit together, and went down to the sea, down at the Solent, to a place called Monk's Hill, which is just to the west. Is it just the west? Yeah, just to the west of Leon Solent, sort of between Leon Solent and Hill's Head, where there's normally lots of kite surfers and wind surfers, so I thought I'd get some action shots. And I was very lucky when I got there, the tide was out, or, well, considerably far out, and because of the way that all the shingle is, there's some bits that kind of stick out into the sea. So I managed to find this place where these wind surfers were, where I could get out actually further into the sea, if you like, you know, by walking on the shingle than they were. Almost like a spit sticking out, a mini spit. So I could be looking back at them and taking photographs back at them across the sea towards the land. Conditions weren't great. It was a bit of a grey day and there was lots of spray around. So my camera lens was getting covered in spray. And it was very, very windy, but I managed to get some quite nice shots. But what I made sure I did at the end was, as I was going, I saw one of the other windsurfers was there and I ran over and I gave him my card and said, look, I may well have some photos of you that I'd like to share. Here's my card. Email me with your email address and I'll email them. And the guy said, well, you're not a pro, are you? You don't sell your photos, do you, back to us? I said, no, I'm just an amateur. Because then I thought, well, yeah, wouldn't that be good? You know, if you took sort of lots of photographs for people and shared them out, so you got known as a photographer of, you know, these action sports like windsurfing or kitesurfing, or jet skiing, that sort of thing, and you could give away lots and lots of photos. But if they came to you with a specific idea of saying, look, I'd like some photos of this or me doing this, you can say, okay, well, and then you could work out some sort of payment for that. So I did that, and the guy sent me his email address, and I sent him back some photos and said, look, with you know, if you use these, please credit robinonphoto.com. And he said, well, he actually doesn't use with Facebook or anything like that, so I thought, oh, great. But there's another guy who emailed me as well, because I did a video of it and put that on YouTube, and he saw the video and said, oh, you haven't got any of me, have you? I was wearing like a red helmet, I think, or white helmet. So I sent him some photos and he really liked them as well. So that was pretty cool. And then yesterday I went down to the Solent again, because it seemed like a nicer day, but again, by the time I got down there, it was all overcast. And there were some jet skis and some kite surfers. Unfortunately, the tide was in, so I couldn't do that same trick. So it's a bit tricky trying to get dynamic shots of kite surfers and wind surfers from the beach when they're quite far away. Because all you really get them is going backwards and forwards and doing the occasional trick. But there was some jet skiers around, and as what normally happens, I see jet skiers or skidooers or whatever they're called doing stuff. And as I walk towards them, they normally all stop and decide to have a cup of tea or refuel. But anyway, there's one guy who is doing some jumps and things. So I've got some fairly interesting shots of him as well, so that was quite good. But this leads me into, in fact, let me just take a quick drink, excuse me, that leads me into a kind of decision I've made recently about protecting my photographs when I put them online. When I first started off uploading photos to Flickr, and Facebook and places like that, I would always put a copyright notice on them. But then for the last several years, I haven't bothered. I upload full resolution photographs. Straight, not straight out of the camera, but the edited ones, full resolution, to Flickr with no notice on them at all. In the EXIF data, I always make sure there's the stuff that says copyright, Rob Nunn, please contact, it's not my email address and all that sort of stuff. But I don't add anything else on. But over the last few months, there's been loads of stories of photographers having photos used by other people, news agencies, websites, television stations, other artists, without payment or attribution. Or even when the photographer says, actually, excuse me, that was my photo, please give me some money or at least some credit, they're not. And I think this is because, the reality, no matter what is right or wrong or what the law is, the reality is that people just don't know that they're not allowed to use images they find on the web. And this just isn't the normal user like you or I or your mum or your dad or your sister. It's the people who run websites, who run news organisations, who run TV stations and print magazines. And it's even other photographers and artists as well. Lots of people think if it's on the web and I can right click it, download, they will. And they will use it because they think it's fair game, it's in the open, it's, what's that term that people use as well? When you can use something that kind of belongs to somebody else because it's newsworthy. I can't remember what it is, but they say, it's out. And the attitude of lots of these large news organisations, especially the web-based ones, is that they seem to think that if the photo is on a public platform, say you've used Twitter or Flickr to use it, then it's newsworthy and they're okay to use it as they wish and they'll face the consequences afterwards. You can imagine, as a photographer, how do you think you'll do against a large company with a dedicated team? I also think you need to protect your photos if you've got other people or other people's properties in them too. And I guess this kind of thinking probably comes from my recent photographs of things like these windsurfers or jet skis, because, if I take photos of somebody, and then I share those photos with them, so they know who I am and they've got my contact details. What would happen if somebody else borrowed those photos off the web, off Flickr, and say used them in a different project without my permission, so maybe even a commercial project, and then that windsurfer found out? They could be quite upset about it and, hold me responsible. Even if I had no legal responsibility, the moral responsibility, there we go, as the person who took the photo, I think I've got a bit of a duty of care to make sure that photo doesn't get used for things where the original subject might not want. Say you were taking pictures of architecture or somebody's house or something like that. Imagine if that thing got used somewhere else, without their or your permission. It's not your fault that it's got stolen, but, that won't affect the feelings of the person whose property that is. They won't feel particularly friendly towards you. So, what am I going to do? Well, this might change over time, but what I've decided is that at the moment I'm only uploading photos with a maximum long size of 2000 pixels, which is large enough to display nicely on most screens and televisions. And also I'm putting a big fat copyright message in the corner, copyright, C with a little circle around it, robnunphoto.com. Now, I know this won't stop people borrowing my photos, but it means the photos won't be very good for printing, though I know people do print out web images quite large and don't seem to mind all the graininess and the artifacts. And I think that big copyright notice will either put people off, or it will force them to take the time to crop out the notice, which might mean they go on to a different similar image from somebody else. Or if they do leave it in, it's obvious they're using an image without permission. Imagine, say I was at a newsworthy event. Last night when I was taking photos of these windsurfers, this aeroplane went over because there's an airfield down at Lee, and a light aircraft take off from it. And this aeroplane was going over my head. It was making a racket, really noisy engine. And then it was like the engine cut out. It went silent. I think actually what happened was the fact that the wind was blowing in a different direction. I couldn't hear the noise of the engine anymore. Anyway, at the time I thought, that engine's just cut on the aeroplane. It's going to go down in the sea, and obviously I would have phoned the Coast Guard and everybody, but, I got my camera out. Imagine I've got a newsworthy picture of that aeroplane crashing into the sea, and I get home, and upload it to Flickr and Twitter and say, oh, look at this, maybe even, you know, send it to the local newspaper. But I make sure I put a big fat copyright message on it. Copyright, robnonphoto.com. So they know that that image belongs to me. And if they use it without my explicit permission, they're breaking the law. It'll stop them doing it. So they'll either, you know, give me the proper attribution, and then I could give them an image without that copyright message on it. Or, you know, they'll pay me and do it that way. And if they do use it without permission with the copyright, you know, you've got to be pretty dumb to do that if you're in a major news organization. Now, I know you're saying, well, in major news organizations, they'll crop it out. But, you know, then I will have the evidence that they have cropped it out. And then I think if you did, you know, go to a lawyer and say, look, I want to go after them, that would be pretty damning evidence. And I know, especially in America, if you register your images with the Copyright Office, which in America you definitely should do, you know, because if in America you register your images with the Copyright Office and somebody uses them without permission, not only do you get the statutory damages, which is where you could say, well, you know, this type of photograph would normally earn you $200 or $500, which you could get. If you've registered it with the Copyright Office, you can then go, there's an unlimited fine that then can go, unlimited damages, sorry, that then can go against the people who have used it. So that's very, very, very important. Now, I know this won't stop people borrowing my photos, you know, it's gonna help. And the other thing as well is that if say people are borrowing the images and putting them on websites or even in print or something like that, but it's still got my photo, my web address on it, robnonphoto.com, at least I've then got that little bit of advertising which could direct people who like the photos actually back towards me, so I can get some benefit with some more visitors to the website. Or, you know, maybe somebody saying, oh, could you do some photos like this? So the next thing, it's over to you, really. Have you thought about protecting your images? I mean, maybe you do so already, and what technique do you use? Have you thought about, you know, how one of your subjects or models might feel if they discovered a photograph that you had taken had been used for something they didn't expect it by someone else or another organisation that you didn't know about either? So, please get in touch with me, scalespeeder@gmail.com, that's scalespeeder@gmail.com, or you can always put comments in the comment section at robnonphoto.com. And especially as well, if you've had any of your photos used without permission, if you've experienced theft. I've done some searches on some of my photos on Google Image Search and TinEye, and I can't really see many that have been stolen. I don't know how I feel about that. I feel quite bad. I would hope that more of the images, more of the popular images people were using, because that means that if they're not good enough to steal, then nobody's going to want to pay for them either. But anyway, that's by the by. That's it from me for this episode. Now, remember, we have got a photo assignment going on over in the Flickr group, which runs to the end of the month, which isn't that long. You know, we're just over halfway through the month, which is macro. The macro photography, isn't it? Animals, insects, or plants. So take part in that. I haven't done anything yet, but I'm going to probably have a crack at it this afternoon or maybe tomorrow. Thanks to everybody for putting their photos in the robnonphoto.com Flickr group. Thanks for everybody for commenting and taking part in the assignments and commenting on robnonphoto.com. But most of all, I'd like to thank you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from robnonphoto.com, and hopefully pretty soon I'll see you on Flickr.